Questlove Supreme is a production of iHeartRadio. This classic episode was produced by the team at Pandora.
This week on QLS, we're really excited to bring you a second part of our exclusive interview with Kenneth Babyface Edmonds. Let's start the show.
How do you determine, because looking at your solo career from, you know, Tender Lover was 89? Tender Lover was 89, and then...
Don't forget about Lovers, man.
Lovers was, 87.
86, 87, somewhere around.
Yeah, and but from that to then, you know, For the Cooling You, like, which is my favorite one. Like, how did you determine...
Video, too.
Man, how did you determine, okay, this is for me, and this is for my artists or other people I'm producing for? How did you balance that workload?
Songs first. And whatever... I get asked that question many times. Why didn't you keep In the Road? Why didn't you keep Every Little Step? Because listen to who sung it and listen to the songs those became, you know. So I think the songs ultimately find their right homes. And for me, there's certain songs that I could do and that I could do well, and certain songs I wish I could have done better, but I couldn't. So I was honest with myself and gave them away for that reason.
What's an example of a song that you gave away that you thought?
End of the Road. Once I finished it, I said, oh, man.
Was it your vocal that just didn't work out? Or
yeah, so I just didn't. I specifically wrote it for Boyz II Men. Okay. So I was going for that whole old Philly sound, you know. And then when they started singing it, I was, you know, because I really almost kept it. But when those boys walked in there and started singing, I said, damn.
It found a new home.
It was like, you know, it was clear that, wow. That moment was clear that they were a better group than I thought they were. And I knew that I would want to work with them again.
Question. How many songs did you work on for the Dangerous Project for Michael Jackson? I'm hearing 20.
No.
10?
When we got called to work with Michael.
Right.
We had just signed Jermaine Jackson on LaFace.
Oh, God.
Wow.
Oh, no.
And then Michael heard a little song called Word to the Bad and all that.
Shit, I forgot Word to the Bad.
Yeah.
I forgot Word to the Bad.
R&B diss track.
Yo, wow. I totally forgot.
Yeah, Word to the Bad.
You wrote that?
With Jermaine.
Jermaine, and like Left Eye was on it.
Okay, so we got called.
Totally forgot the story.
When we signed him up, then we got a call from the Gloved One and wanted to meet us. And I'm like, I had met Michael in my, you know, younger days, but he didn't know that. But so we got the call that, you know, I'd like to meet with you guys. So he sent a helicopter.
Stunt.
And we went out to Neverland. And we were like, all right, we got to go. We can't not go. I know we just signed Jermaine, but we can't not go. This is Michael. And Jermaine was like, this is crazy.
You told Jermaine you were doing this?
Yeah, he knew. This is my brother. He's trying to, he's purposely, whatever. So.
Jermaine.
And so we got to Neverland and sat in the living room, waited for a little bit for Michael to come out. Then Michael finally came out and, pleased to meet you guys. How are you doing? I said, great. He says, so I wanted to bring you guys here because I really wanted to know, you know, if you wanted to do some work with me and stuff. So I said, that's great. You know, obviously been a fan for years. So Michael, so what we want to know is that, what do you want from us?
Right.
Because like, you know, what have you heard from us? What do you want to, what kind of music are you looking for? And he goes, well, so I really love that thing that, what's that song that Janet does? Oh, Rhythm
oh,
Nation.
No. Oh, shit. It's like, no, nah, that's like, not us.
And we're like.
Oh, my God.
Oh, wow. You done helicoptered the wrong niggas down
here. And so, I think Ellie goes, so you know that's Jimmy Terry, right? I said, yeah, I know. but I like it. And then we said, so I said, so what is it of ours that you like? And he goes, well, I particularly love that song, A Crime. It's No Crime.
Okay.
Yeah, I love the beat. I don't like the beat. I don't like the words. But I love the beat.
Oh, God. I was He's like, a neg master.
Okay. Wow. All right. But, you know, me, Mr. Positive, and, you know, you can, I was like, okay, all right. So that gives us a direction. At least we know kind of where to go, because it didn't matter. He could have said our stuff was crap, and we would have said, well, we'll make it, we'll uncrap it. And so we got the, you know, he said, let's go to the studio and work. Let's put some work together and do some studio, put some studio time together. And so we went out and worked. I forget what the studios we went out to work at. But prior to that, right after that meeting, we had we went up to Lionel Richie's house. Pabst happened to be friends with Brenda Ritchie.
Mm-hmm.
Was very good friends with Brenda Ritchie. And we went over to the house and Lionel was there. And Lionel said, now I'm going to tell you something about Michael. He said, he's a nice guy, but don't get caught. Don't get caught in the web of, you know, all the, you know, the charm and the magic stuff, because you'll be working forever and never come out with nothing. So just be careful to not get caught up in that web, because, you know, he's so magical that you'll be magicked out and you won't even know. So we went in there kind of with a different attitude when we went to work with them, because I would see the guys that could be so hard and stuff like that, and you get in front of Michael Jackson, they be suddenly they become little lambs. No matter how hard you are, you talk to Michael Jackson, it's a whole nother story. Michael just was, he's magical.
Mm-hmm.
So we kind of like stayed strong because of that. And so we went in and we started working on tracks. I think we probably went through 3 or 4 tracks. And he'd come in, he'd listen to him. Nice. Love it. Okay, now you see that right there? Take this. Now I want you to, it's beautiful. But now I want you to go to a place that you've never gone before. Reach inside and go to a place that you've never gone. We were like, oh, yeah.
We got magicked out.
Yeah. You're right. We haven't gone far enough. So we went back and start going further and further. And then he'd come back and we picked up the track. We like, we know we there now. We just playing the track. We hadn't even done the top lines yet, but we going for the tracks and stuff like. So he'd come in and listen. And this was like probably about the fourth day. He was supposed to come by each day. He didn't come by till the fourth day. And then he came in and he listened to it. I love it. It's great. No. You can see him there, figured out his steps.
Right in front of you.
Beautiful. No, I love this. Now, this is perfect, but now what I want you to do is go even deeper.
Oh, man.
Oh, wow.
And go to a place that you've never gone before.
Wait, can I ask?
He's right.
What does that entail?
Going deeper?
Is that Michael Lee's for something?
Deeper, yeah.
Is that more patches in the song? Is it
more cowbell?
More percussion?
No, it's like, give me something different. Give me something unique. Give me something that, you know, we haven't heard before.
So patches? So
it's pushing. No, it's even the
rhythms.
It could be anything. So he wasn't completely pulled in yet. And so we ultimately did this song called Slave to the Rhythm. And
okay.
And that's the song that we ended up with, and that we, but then he was supposed to come by the studio, wouldn't come by. And then me and LA sat down one day. We said, you know what? We've been here a week. He came down. He came here twice. Out of 7 days, he came here twice. We out of here.
What?
So we left. We went back over to another studio. Forget the name of the studio we went to. Michael called LA and said, what happened? Where'd you guys go? LA said, nope, we got other stuff to do. We can't do it. This is our song. This is it. And we were done. And we pulled out of the project. Wow. So.
And you were fine with it?
We were fine with it. Because what we didn't want to be is those producers that would get caught with one artist and only have one artist. Our career was built on a number of artists, and had we stopped at one and just stopped there, then you just hang your flagship on one, and that's what you're
hoping. You go however they go.
Yeah. So we wanted to always be able to, and at that point we had started the label. And then, you know, Jermaine was pretty pissed at that particular point.
So. Really? You think?
That's what I was going to ask. How do you do all this and then have LaFace? Yeah. Right.
Like, that was the thing. Look, we had LaFace and we were supposed to be working on our artists at that particular point. So when you get a call from Michael, we was like, we got to do Michael. And so we tried it. We went there, but we knew we couldn't stay there forever to keep doing it. And we felt like we were going to run into that. It was more of a thing of thinking, Michael, well, maybe we don't see the same things, and maybe we're not the guys for you. So we don't want to go through this whole process.
Did you feel in your heart of hearts that you had a good song?
With Slave?
Yeah.
I thought it was pretty good, but I didn't think we got a chance to work it to make it the best, you know. I think that with any artist that you start to work with, you're going to go through some songs that aren't great. But if you get more time with them, then you will get to that greatness. But you got to have that time. You got to have the time to have the bad songs in order to have the great songs.
So when you started LaFace, I guess it's impossible for any black entrepreneur to not have thoughts of Motown in their heads, as in, like,
of course,
what's my label gonna be? Oh, the new Motown.
Yeah.
What were your, well, I mean, by this point, at least like 92, 93, you and LA are about to separate, and you're about to produce on your own, and he runs the label. Like, how did you guys come into an amicable?
It was the label became the thing for LA. He had to run the label.
Mm-hmm.
It was a little hard for him to keep producing and be a writer and all that, and actually run the label
and do business.
He couldn't really do that. You had to make a choice. You're either going to be a businessman or you're going to be an artist. And the truth is LA was always kind of the businessman. He was always, that was his role. You know, going way back to the deal, he was like the guy that made sure everybody got to eat. Going back to his days, you know, back to, you know, Essence and the deal living in Indianapolis and making sure he made some deals with some people at Church's Chicken to make sure they could eat every night. so that was his gig. And he basically became, you know, the manager of, you know, LaFace Records. He had to make sure everybody got chicken.
But how does that work from an artist? Like, when y'all decided which artist would be, did he at least say, okay, so this is this group, Goody Mob. I just want you to hear so you know.
We were always on the same page, okay, in terms of, we never fought in terms of artist and whether something was good or not. That's where we were always good together, is that, you know, our tastes are very similar. So we kind of would support each other.
What was your relationship like with Outkast? Because
I wasn't around as much with Outkast. Okay. And so I would kind of see the guys, because at that point I was kind of like doing a lot of producing out this way and kind of making the L.A. connection, so to say.
Gotcha.
And
so you were working in Los Angeles while he stayed in Atlanta.
Yeah.
What was it about Atlanta that attracted or made that the official?
We were living here in L.A. and we felt like we needed to get out of here in order to, like, you know, be a big fish in a little sea. If we tried to start a label here, then they'd never know we were here. And
Atlanta as Minneapolis?
Yes.
Or, yeah, okay.
And so in going down there, we, you know, we were right to go there, and we got very lucky, you know, that the talent came to find us. There's some talent that we lost out on, you know.
Who almost didn't get signed to the label, or who didn't? Who did you miss out on?
We had an A&R person that had got something that we found out after the fact. I got to make sure that's true, that the story, in fact, is true, because it's sad if it is. But R. Kelly.
Mm. Really? Oh, what?
And they this is bull stuff. So it's bull crap. So we never got it. We never got to even hear it.
But when did he? Because you guys did music together too. He wouldn't have told you y'all missed out on me. You know that, right?
In the middle. I never asked him.
Okay. In the middle of Can't Breathe.
That's crazy. So okay, one of your clients that we're particularly curious about, who's done our show before, Usher Raymond.
Oh yeah.
Says one of his career regrets was the fact that he did not get a freshly penned Babyface classic when he first signed to the label.
Went
so far as to tell us that Can We Talk was initially his song.
I think he still got pain.
To this day, he's like, that's my song.
Yes, he believes that.
Oh,
he believes that. When Usher came, he came at a time when me and LA were going through some stuff.
Wait, is Usher like Cam and Jay-Z and Dame?
Oh, yeah.
He mentioned this in
the
story.
Usher came, he's this bad little kid, came and sang End of the Road and his demo, and he was bad. He was a little kid, he was bad.
Mm-hmm.
Bad as in good or bad
Okay. Badass.
Gotcha.
And I certainly, thought he was an amazing kid. He came at a time when me and LA were had our issues. And so I ended up being out here in LA a lot. I got a call from Quincy Jones to write a song for Devin Campbell. Mm-hmm. And it's Quincy Jones. I was like, it's Quincy Jones. So I wrote Can We Talk? And did a demo of it. And Elliot heard the record, I think, and he wanted it for Usher, but I had already given it to Tevin. And it was a question of, well, Usher can sing better and he can sing as good. And I said, well, but I kind of already did this deal with Quincy, and I ain't going to tell Quincy no at this particular point. So the song ultimately went to. And so the song was never really for Usher. But from the way that probably L.A.
he
talked
says
about
otherwise.
Usher feels otherwise.
Because I'm sure L.A. said it differently. That's supposed to be your
he
song.
Gave you a song to, right. I see.
That certainly went that way. I'm sure that's kind of how it went. So Usher's not wrong in terms of how it came to him. He just don't know the real story behind it.
I see.
Still.
Do you? Okay,
now he's going to know.
Between 94 and 99, did you personally get tired of hearing you on the radio?
No, because I wouldn't listen.
How?
I would, if something came on that I did, then I'd turn the radio off. I'd listen to talk radio.
Then you obviously just
you never listened.
Got rid of music.
Yeah, so because during that time, because Waiting to Exhale is 95, and then
what was it like producing? You produced everything on Waiting to Exhale?
Yeah.
How hard was that was it a good idea at the time? Versus getting to the end point?
It was a huge undertaking, only because it wasn't about it. When I did the project, Forrest Whitaker came to me and asked me to do it. Mm-hmm. And when he and then not only did he ask me just to do that, but he also asked me to score the film. And I said, well, I've never done that. And he said, that's it. And I told him, I can't do that because that's not what I do. And he said, you can do it, and I'll get you some help to make sure you can do it. But initially, I want you to come, and I want you to write the songs for this film. And I want you to watch the movie as I'm doing it and write the songs. So I ultimately kind of took all my gear over to a studio with him as he was editing the film. And I also watched him film it as well. And then he gave me a kind of sense of where he wanted to go. And as he'd send me scenes, I'd write songs to it. And the truth is, I think every time I wrote a song, he liked it.
Wow.
And so I didn't really go through a bunch of different songs, and I was just kind of hitting each scenes. And then we had to figure out who was going to sing it. And initially, when we were doing the music, it wasn't even, we weren't for sure that Whitney was going to sing anything at all. She wasn't necessarily, she might sing something, she might not, we didn't know.
Really?
And then, because it wasn't going to be a Whitney project. They just wanted me to do the music for it. So then Whitney decided that she was going to sing something, and then Whitney decided that if I'm going to be part of it, then I get to have say so on who gets to sing, who don't get to sing.
Huh?
So
was someone kicked off the album that we don't know about?
There were some people that she didn't necessarily want to sing.
Dare we ask who? Or?
I'm just happy SWV made it. That's
no, she liked SWV. Yeah, yeah. And so the list came up of the girls. I wrote out a list, and then I just wrote out the list, and she just kind of said, nope, 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 yep, yep. And
who were the no's?
I was sitting here trying to guess. I said, because I know she loved everybody, Faith.
Well, everybody was on the record.
Everybody was on the record.
Who's left?
Aretha.
Who in black music was it a black artist that got rejected?
One of them, yeah.
Some pop artist got rejected?
Mm-hmm.
No Madonna.
Madonna
I'm sure,
couldn't be
I'm
on
sure
XL.
You guys went for the big guns.
No, she couldn't have been.
Did you go for big non-black names?
On the black movie about the black women?
This is fun for us to guess this. You don't have to name anything. You don't have to name anything.
There was another huge artist that...
In
Janet Jackson.
No. Oh, you're okay. Not confirming or denying?
I'm not confirming or denying? I deny that's no, wasn't
okay.
It?
Oh, okay.
Vanessa Williams.
Yeah, she wasn't on there. She wasn't on there.
Okay, that's all right.
But I feel like I feel like the
that's two major people.
I feel like Mount Fiji
that could have been on there.
Mariah.
Hello.
I'm not confirming or denying.
Yeah, no, but that does make sense.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Mariah was not on that soundtrack though.
No,
right?
She was not.
But would Tommy let her on a Clive project?
Probably not. Jeez,
that's a baby, but that's a pill, baby.
Probably not.
Okay, so obviously Mariah was one. Although,
was big
so I'm
like
certain,
that.
Am I to believe that before the Prince of Egypt project, that maybe perhaps there was an idea thrown around that Mariah and Whitney do something together on the Waiting to Exhale soundtrack?
Yeah.
Too soon.
I'm going to give myself.
Oh,
I'm
going
to give myself.
Word up.
The tape. Strong day.
Well done.
Word up. Columbo.
I told you, we're a bunch of dweebs.
Spent too many time reading album credits.
we would have this conversation if you weren't here. Yeah. So.
That wasn't a big conversation, big piece, but there were other people that were kind of mentioning. So the people that she did pick were people that she actually, she liked the voices.
Oh, yeah, CeCe.
And okay.
Shantae Moore.
And we were
so no total.
We were just kind of in search of
no total. Help me sing. No total.
Right. Y'all are never gonna let me live that down.
I'm sorry. I love you, total guys. Total.
What about us as a jam? Look,
yeah, come on. Just,
okay,
Soul
okay.
Food soundtrack. We'll get to that. We'll
Ooh,
get to
yes,
that. We'll get to
in
that
in due time.
Yeah.
How long did it take? What you did there.
In due. How long did it take working on that? Because that's a lot of songs. Yeah. You know.
I can't even remember. It was a couple months, probably, you know.
How long did it take to do Aretha's song?
I love that. That's one of my favorites.
Really?
Yeah.
And I figured she would be the hardest client.
She came in and sang that in three takes.
What? Really? Damn, so the Mavericks just knock it out. Let me find out, like, Faith Evans took 12 weeks to do her vocals.
Never.
No, I just meant, like...
Just to no, throw it around.
Aretha basically will come in. You got three times, and then it's way out of here. You know, it's like.
So all the Mavericks are just like, yo.
Shaka, too, because she does.
Because that's how they had
too.
To do it back then. I mean, wasn't no Pro Tools in.
And that was 62. Fun. Shaka, I actually went to England and recorded her there in England. So that was fun. And that was. It was. As you're putting the project together, you feel like it's special, but you don't completely know. And when it was all put together, it was the first time I handed something into Clive and he had no comments.
Oh. Ooh. Wow. Was that a good or bad thing?
It was an amazing thing. I was like, really? You sure you don't want me try to do something? And so there was questions about, you know, from a lot of different people. There was questions. I remember I had a big debate with Andre Harrell about, you know, Mary's song,
Not Gonna Cry,
because he felt like that was, Mary was too young to sing that song.
What?
Well, because, you know, it's...
Did he hear the
My Life
album?
That was the beginning
album?
Of...
Yeah, that was... Yeah. Did he well, hear the My Life album? Right.
I guess you're talking about the years of my life. I gave all yeah. these years. And yeah. it's kind of like a married divorce kind
married
of situation.
Married divorce kids. Yeah. And it was like, that's...
But she was the vessel for that. Like, yeah. that's one of her weird. Lives. She still kills that shit.
I was going to say, like, I think that really took her from Joan Next Door
mm-hmm.
to... Mary. Sister girl, Mary.
Well, it made her grow up, and maybe they weren't ready.
It was her first pop hit.
Yeah.
Yeah. yeah. So, it was?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Wow.
But it was about, I mean, I explained to him, I said, you know, the thing about Mary is that she has all this pain and has the voice to tell the story. And so she is, as you say, she was a vessel for Angela, you know, for Angela's role in that mm-hmm. movie. And because of that, it sold and it worked, and so there's something about all the women that were involved with that movie at this particular as more time goes by, how special it seems, you know, that the work that they did, that everybody did as part of that movie, musically as well as the actual, you know, filming it.
Soulful soundtrack. How close did you guys ever get to a milestone project, or was it just that one song?
That's actually what a good was question. That That's recording? I want to know what that
recording
session,
Casey.
Yeah, I want to know what that session was like.
It was a great. It was a great session. It was so much fun. I mean, I wanted the great thing about doing soundtracks is you got to work with artists that you hadn't had a chance to work with yet. So, and to create a reason to work together and the whole milestone thing, it was perfect. I purposely just kind of, you know, took a back step and was letting it be the guys, you know, between Kevin and Melvin and Casey and JoJo, and just to hear their voices. And they always talked about a milestone thing, but it never really, I think it was record company issues or whatever like that. And it's always something that I've always played around with, you know, thinking about trying to do it at one point, but we just never got there.
What was the advantage of producing that movie and that soundtrack, though? Because that was like your first. That was when was that the first time you did both?
Edmonds Entertainment.
Yeah.
It was first. Sorry, I was.
Okay, no. I was just saying it. What I was thinking, it was the first time, but I couldn't remember if Half Plenty was the.
What's it?
That was Jab Young.
Okay, producing the soundtrack
the actual
and the movie.
Yeah, the movie.
Love 40, baby.
Oh, yeah, I have to say,
that was great.
Like, freaking man. Half Plenty.
Yeah. That what
I have the DVD. I've watched Love 40.
That's my life.
Yeah.
Like,
Love 40,
I thought that was somebody else's
I love
life.
That.
Well, yeah, that's his life, too. Trying to explain D'Angelo when this is a movie about your life that you don't know about. He's still, yeah, I heard about this. So how did that project wind up in your lap?
It was kind of, we ran into the, I'm losing his name right now. Chris
Scott Chereau.
Chris Chereau.
Yeah. Damn. How do you know this?
I have the DVD. Thank you. Low 40.
Chris Chereau, we ran into him at Sundance, and we were able to kind of take that film where we took it to Sundance and was able to get it made through, you know, in that way. But we had saw the film. And loved it. Thought he was great. That whole Love 40 thing was amazing.
By the way, Steve, do you know the story behind this?
No.
Steve engineered D'Angelo's Voodoo. So
nice.
Not the lead engineer.
Dog, you were there. Like,
I was there.
We were there.
That part's true.
We were there in prison for 6 years.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, Michael Jackson took a week.
You guys got the magic.
He got magic right, down after a week.
Yeah, so Love 40 was supposed to be like Brown Sugar, like a song about a 40 ounces of love.
Oh, okay.
Like, like literally, this guy. I guess the narrative is that the lead protagonist was in love with, what's her name? That she used to work at.
Her name was Haviland Savage.
Yes.
Right. No. But I meant
the real name. The real.
You really know that movie.
Haviland Savage. I gotta go watch
it. I forgot
it.
The. I can, if you wouldn't ask me, I could have told you.
Well, she used to date Dean.
Chinua Maxwell.
Right. No, no, no. But I'm saying that the A&R that worked at the publishing spot that D was playing at when he got signed, he and her started dating. So the movie's really based on a real life story of this kind of triangle between this R&B singer and the object of her affections and the guy that, like, he just basically made a movie about it. Yeah. And yeah, it's quite
good,
crazy.
We're gonna take some half penny sales up. That's what's up.
It's a, you never seen it?
Yo, it's been a long.
I've actually never seen it.
I didn't want. You thank you, Bill.
It's a classic.
It's really. It's a classic.
All right. So you said you never got tired of yourself on the radio, but after, like, what do you say when Eric Clapton comes calling, like? Is it? Oh yeah, of course. Like,
yeah, you say
God himself is.
How does he know who I am? Yeah, that's what you say.
Whose idea was that?
Kathy Nelson from
MCA.
MCA, yeah.
How do you know that?
He has the DVD. Credits,
Kathy Nelson. I know her name because she was on the CB4 soundtrack. Whatever. Anyway.
Good job. I can't wait to unpay Bill this episode.
Right.
Yo, you're like a walking the credit.
He's walkingdiscogs.com.
I know. Oh my God. Jesus. All right. So she came up with the idea.
Kathy Nelson, yeah, she called and said that, you know, she had this idea, had this song. Winona Judd had done the song and sent me the song to let me hear it. And then she said, now I have this idea for you to do it with Eric Clapton. I sent it to Eric Clapton, and actually Eric Clapton said he would do it, but he would only do it if you produced it. Mm. And I was like, well, how does he even know who I am? And then we got on the phone, and he told me that he was a fan of, he loved the song, When Can I See You Again? And said that, you know, he was very inspired by that, and he thought I could do a good job with him on that. So went to England and recorded it with him.
That was a crying song. That I just remember when that came out and the video came out. It was just
started crying.
But where can I? Oh, if I could change the world.
Change the world. Change the world. And how come? How long? Oh Lord! Don't play that video. This just a lot.
Where'd you record that song?
Which one?
The Clapton song.
In England. I forget the name of the studio that was at, but we recorded part of it there, and then part of it here in Record Plant.
Was that after? I'm trying to remember. Was that after Take a Bow? Was it before?
I don't know.
I forgot about Madonna.
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, no, Madonna was before. She was 94.
Okay, thank you. Then, yeah.
Was it easy recording her? Or?
Yeah, me and Madonna got along very well. Same thing. She liked When Can I See You? And so she went to work together because of that. And she came to my house at the time. I was lived on San Ysidro, and we wrote the song there at the house. And actually, I had a little studio in the house where we recorded part of it there.
One question I always had, a project I always had a question about, was Tony Rich.
Tony Rich. I was afraid to ask.
Yeah, because
why?
I thought it was you.
Yeah. First time I heard it, yeah.
Yeah, so how did that come about?
When me and L.A. Were mad at each other.
Okay, what happened?
I can't tell that.
Never mind.
Okay.
But how many artists were a reflection of it? We got the Kevin Campbell, we got the Tony Rich.
Yeah. But me and L.A. kind of had fell out. And so Pebs went to find another me. So she found Tony Rich.
Wow. Mm. Aww. Wow. You did not write Nobody Knows?
Nope.
No, he didn't. That's why I thought it was. I had that album.
I need laser shots.
Whoops.
You did not write that?
I did not.
You had nothing to do with that?
Nothing to do with it, other than him being on my label.
Yeah, like he has the plaque for his greatest biter on his wall.
That's super exception.
It's like,
that's a good friend, though. Like, that's a good fight. Like, I'm going to fight with you, but you're going to get paid. Don't worry about it.
Wait a minute. I thought you wrote.
So many people thought that, but no.
No.
Or at least sing backup on it.
Nah.
No.
When I first heard John B., I thought that was. Because when they was like, yeah, that's the new John B. featuring Babyface. I was like, okay, when did John B. sing? I didn't know he was on that record.
When I said I was afraid to ask, I mean, the thing was, like, I was like, well, how do you feel about working with someone that sounds so closely to you? Like, how did you? It's the Walter and Scotty situation. I didn't know that you had nothing.
He had shit to do with that, Jay. Yeah, yeah. It was all Tony Rich, baby.
Okay.
And nobody knew it except those two. Yeah.
No, I had that album. I think I ordered like from Columbia House or some shit.
Yeah. But, Columbia.
I had that record.
12 CDs for a dollar.
That's.
Yeah.
I just lost my, I literally just lost my mind right now.
Your mind and your thought. Right.
So I wanted to ask you, with Yab Yum, what were some of the artists, one of the artists that you guys had signed, Larnia?
Is it Larnay?
Larnay.
Yes.
That's how you pronounce it.
I thought it was Larnay too.
Larnay, he was a great artist.
Yes.
And she had an amazing voice. But that was Tracy's label. That wasn't really my label. That was okay. You know, so that was kind of like their thing. And I supported it, you know. But Larnay was one of those really great artists that, you know, I'm sorry it didn't work out for her like I think it should have, because she's amazing voice and also amazing spirit about her as well. Beautiful person.
The evolution of Tracy Edmonds is quite amazing. Like, she has become a role model for a lot of women, especially executives. That how does that make you feel, like some of the things that you guys built? And
I'm proud that she was able to, you know, come from where she came from, because, you know, people just, they, you know, she was in a video, so they called her Video Girl. And so I spent a good deal of time trying to take that off of her and give her the opportunity to prove that, you know, that she's a business person. Business.
I mean, that soul food was just. Yeah.
So it was a lot more about that, you know. Women in business, many times they will not get the same shot because they think that they don't know what they're doing or it's just this, you know, it's a chauvinistic,
man's game.
Yeah. And so I think when you're in a position to help someone, then that's what you should do. You know?
A buddy of mine, a new artist that you're working with, or she said you guys were working together, Kat Graham.
Yeah.
She wanted me to ask you, which I thought was a great question, what do you do when you have writer's block? Or is that even a thing for
do you?
Do you
have writer's block?
Like, does that even exist?
Yeah, you just don't write.
Just let it go.
Okay. Just stop.
Yeah, just don't write, and then.
I thought it was a baby face pun.
Yeah, right.
Oh, let it go. No, it's let it flow.
Oh.
random baby face question I just wanted to ask in the last 2 years. Solid. Can you tell me how Solid came about, and how did Ty Dolla $ign? How did that happen?
Ty called here and wanted to work with me.
And you just.
And I said, great, because I love his voice. And incredible voice. And then. As I met him, we just did some more work together just recently too. So, but when we started to work together, and then I saw how much of a musician he was. That's what I was impressed about. And
does he play?
Yeah.
Okay.
And good musician. And so he's very untapped in terms of what his real talent is, I think. And I think that will keep showing as more time goes by. But It was fun to do that. Then we just recently did some more work again, and I like doing work everywhere. So whether it's, you know, whether it's hip hop or whether it's, you know, country or any genre, because to be able to, why I feel so blessed is because I can work with the Ty Dolla $ign, you know,
and a Lil Wayne
month ago, our Lil Wayne. Then I can also, then I'm working with Johnny Mathis. I do a Barbara Streisand.
Oh,
shit.
Johnny Mathis. And oh, God.
I have a question. What was it like? How did the Fall Out Boy project work come about?
Oh, that was great too.
Because that seems like really random.
It's another thing where I get calls from, you know, these artists that, you know, Patrick from Fall Out Boy called and wanted to do some work and wanted to figure out how we could work together. And so, I was able to, you know, do a couple things with them, and they called me because of the Josie and the Pussycats movie and the music I did for the Josie and the Pussycats.
I was going to say, I once tried to do this like real serious symposium like in New York, and I had their ears, and then I had to give a reference, and I gave a Josie and the Pussycats reference, and the collective
lost everybody.
They were like, get out of here. But the thing was, y'all were really trying to drop some science in that movie. I mean, it was beyond.
Yeah.
I watched it on. It was like a, it was on a the airplane when you're on the airplane. But it wasn't the standard popcorn fare. You guys were literally trying to expose all the magician's tricks to how the industry works.
Yeah.
And I almost felt like when I watched it, I was like, wait, are y'all allowed to do this? Like, how are they not trying to get rid of you guys? Like, what was, I mean, what was the
it was because it was colored in this comical, you know.
Have you guys seen it?
I haven't seen it.
It's a
like they're literally exposing the industry. It's like behind what's the behind the music? That Behind the Music documentary I did where they expose how records get on Clear Channel and all that stuff.
Right. Oh, okay.
Behind the Song. I forget what it's called. But this is like the movie version of that.
It's a great movie, actually. And the music was fun. And so it's one of those projects I'm proud to have been a part of, for sure.
So I guess there was a not necessarily silence, but before you did your solo project in 2001.
Face to Face?
Yeah.
Yeah.
With the Neptunes. Like, at that point, did you just feel like, okay, well, I don't totally have to have, like, 15 number ones every year. Like, I can... Like, what made you want to let someone else produce you?
That was rough. Because...
And working with the Neptunes.
Well, that was cool.
Okay.
Because I wanted to learn. And I work with younger writers and younger producers that I like to see what they do. There's never a point where you can't learn more.
Mm-hmm.
And to watch Pharrell work and you know, because he was doing everything all in this InSonic, and I was like, wait a minute, this is all you use?
Right.
That was amazing. And to see him at that particular point, I told him at that point, I said, I know that one day he's going to blow up because of the passion that he has with everything. And I kind of already kind of liked everything that he did. But at that point, what was different for that project for me was that I really kind of let go and let everybody kind of produce me. Mm-hmm. So Heavy D was part of that. And he brought in a couple songs and I was working with Andre Harrell, and so I really kind of was just letting them guide me.
Okay, so I have a story. Do you know the story I'm about to tell?
Mm-mm.
Oh, Jesus Christ. All right, so earlier that day, the Roots are at the House of Blues. This might have been 99, I guess. And I got a weird phone call that I didn't trust. And my manager's like, yo, you're going to go to Babyface's studio after the show tonight. And I was like, for what? He's like, I don't know, to work on stuff. I said, does he want me to drum on stuff? Like, see, make sure my backline's there. I'm thinking I'm going there to drum on it. Yeah. And they're like, to see about production. And I was like, okay, who's punking me? Like, why in the world with the world's most successful songwriter want to dweeb with me, like, with 1.5 hits? I'm like, that doesn't sound right. So I instantly thought it was set up. I thought it was set up
so
time.
You didn't.
Between 96 and 2002, the kind of what they do. Mountain was following me, and I always felt that even with Biggie going, like, I always felt like there was going to be some, like, Bad Boy retaliation about to happen. And it really got confirmed because when we're on stage doing the last, like, by this point, like, Scratch and Ronzel were doing their solo parts in the show, and, you know, the show's about to end. I looked to the stage left, and I saw these three big dudes, like three big monstrous LA dudes at the side, and Tina's like, these guys are gonna drive you to Babyface.
So, and I thought, like, hell no.
I'm gonna die. So, you know, we get off stage and they're like,
yo, what's up, man? How you doing? We're gonna drive you to Face the Studio.
And I knew by that point I was going to die because I was like, this is how Bad Boy Gets Me Back for the What They Do video. And we walked out of the dressing room. We're in the hallway. And I distinctly remember running back to the dressing room. And I grabbed a bag of Lay's Mesquite barbecue chips because I was like, okay, well, at least want to. This is going to be my last meal before I die. And we get in the car, and it's just like the mafia films. Like, I sat in the middle.
Wow.
I sat in the middle. I flanked between these two guys. They drive me to the studio. We go down in this sort of tunnel thing. And when we're walking in the hallway was like the Green Mile death row scene. It was 100% dark. No lights on. And I just like, oh, fuck. I'm about to get baseball batted to death. Like, this is how I'm going to die. And I open the door, and it's Heavy D. And I was like, Heavy D? He's like, hey, man, come on, man. And then I knew it was a setup, because I was like, I didn't know Heavy D as a producer then. You know what I mean? I was like, what are you doing here? He's like, yeah, man, you know, I'm producing Babyface. And then I was like, no. It's like, no, man, you know I produce? Yeah, man, I get down working on Jill Scott, too. And then, like,
oh, wow.
He plays me all these songs. And, you know, by that point, I was like,
it's not a hit. And then,
then he got you, like, on, you were, like, in another studio somewhere. You got on the phone, like, on another line. But, yeah, I thought that I was going to die that night.
Tonight I thought Babyface is going to kill me.
What did y'all end up doing? What's joint?
I ended up breathing a sigh of relief and took about 5 pounds off of me going back to the bathroom.
I'm talking about y'all didn't work together.
No. I listened. Well, by that point, you know, we were like touring like crazy, so I just didn't have time to.
Oh, okay.
To commit to that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I knew that I was being pranked because there was no way in hell that I was supposed to be working on a Babyface record.
Man, it sounds like you're the one person he hasn't worked with yet.
Yeah, I was about to say.
Well, I mean, you're both here right now.
I mean, we are in a studio. The duet that you did with Raphael Sadiq, did you talk about letting other cats produce you? Was that an instance of that?
About that.
Yeah, it was on the. It was on Ray Ray. It was on Ray Ray.
I mean, me and Raphael, we kind of like the same dude sometimes. And so, like, working with him was kind of like working with myself.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
That's a good thing. Okay. I don't worry about if I'm behind the microphone. The hardest part for me is being behind the microphone and singing and then letting somebody tell me if that was good or that wasn't good. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, that wasn't good. And I could do it again or whatever. And so I did the same thing. Actually, I did. There was I worked with Jimmy and Terry that way. We did some work together, and standing behind that mic and being just the artist. I did it with Jimmy and Terry. I did it once with David Foster. Oh, wow. And that's a hard place for me to be. It just I feel like I have more control. I know kind of what to do myself.
What was it like working with Terry and Jimmy? Like, was that surreal for you? Or
we had fun. We did some records that are still nice records, I think, but they weren't exactly they weren't right for the record we were doing at the time. It ultimately didn't come out. And they've talked about releasing a lot of songs. I said whenever they want to put it on their record that they do of all the artists they work with, I'm fine with that.
The Dead Stock record, where
okay,
that sort of thing.
But it was the first time actually kind of being in and actually working with them. And I guess everybody's different in terms of how they do things and how they approach records. And so it's always fun to watch that and see different musicians that they'll bring in and stuff. If you keep your eyes open, you can always learn something. You know, of a feel, or learn how to play something a little bit different. So,
one question I had about Tony, and this may have been more of an LA thing now that you've kind of broken it down. When she sued LaFace, how did you guys get from her suing LaFace to now y'all, you know, doing the Love, Marriage, and Divorce album?
I've always been an artist-friendly person, so I understood where she was coming from. When she sued, she was suing because there was nothing we could do about it. We had a joint venture, and so we didn't really make the final answers on it. So everything that was, we would have gave everybody everything, but we couldn't.
Yeah, she was under the Arista umbrella. Yeah.
And so when we wanted to pay somebody, they wouldn't let us. And so we were, both the TLC and the Toni Braxton situation was because when they came to us and asked for money, we'd say, yep, we agree. We want to give you, and they wouldn't let us do it. So they sued us, and then they ultimately gave them the money.
And why wouldn't Arista let y'all give people the money? Why wouldn't they let y'all pay people?
Were you guys a label proper or a production deal? Because usually with a production deal, it's like, he got to get a cut, he got to get cut, he got to get cut.
Might as well have been a production deal. It was a JV, but the reality is we couldn't make the complete calls. They handled the purse strings. So.
Do you have a relationship with Clive Davis?
Yeah, I do.
What is your feeling with him?
Clive is...
a businessman.
Yeah, he's a businessman. I've worked with him on so many different things that I've had to work with him on, you know, because it's Whitney Houston. You mm-hmm. know, I'm working with him right now with Johnny Mathis.
That's crazy. Wait, Clive still has a label?
He's at least A&R-ing this. He's the head of this. He's came up with this whole idea about Johnny Mathis doing the songbook.
Okay.
You know, a new songbook that...
How old is Clive Davis?
Clive is 80.
In his 80s.
84, maybe.
Damn. God. Takes a licking.
And Johnny Mathis is 82.
Yeah, I hadn't heard his
what's
name
his,
in a while.
What's his vocal prowess like?
Sounds great.
He
sounds great.
Yeah, I saw him on, he was on Tavis Smiley, I think, one night I was watching him. This like a year or so ago. Yeah.
He sounds great.
Okay, so before we wind down, and I know every songwriter does this, like, oh, my songs are my children.
Yes.
Gun to your head. Gun to your head. If all your songs are personified as human beings on the Titanic and they're going down in the ship.
Who do you save?
Which three songs are you saving? What is your... Yes! It doesn't have to be like your biggest hits or whatever, but... So don't say In the Road or whatever, because like, oh, that got me my first house in Malibu. Like,
well, maybe it might be his one of this.
But I meant like, what songs like give you goosebumps, or best memories of recording it, or
like ones that still impress you? Like, I made that, really? How did that come out of me?
That is a hard question because you have to you. When I think about it, I have to think about, like, obviously one of those will be a Whitney song because she's not here. So now XL and I'm Your Baby Tonight feel like very special because of that. But not necessarily because I love them more than any particular song.
Sentimental.
So, and I always give the question, what's the best song I've ever written? I haven't written it yet.
Okay.
Of course. But the truth is, I really believe that. I don't say that to sound cool. I say it because I look at songs that other people write. Damn, I wish I wrote that one.
Okay. So what three songs of yours could you like, I hate that. Like, it could have been better. Or I phoned that one in.
Well, I wish I had another opportunity to work with Michael Jackson and not have given him Slave to the Rhythm, but a better song. I did do, I did do that one. And so the funny thing is,
Michael Jackson has a song, Get On the Bus.
That's what I just, really?
Yeah.
Well, is it called like On the Line or
gotta
something?
Gotta put your heart on the line.
Yeah.
Damn.
And I loved that I had that opportunity. I ultimately became friends with Michael and found myself in places with Michael. Like, what am I doing here? Throughout my career, I found myself at places where I like have to pinch myself. Why? How am I here?
Mm-hmm.
So many times, and whether it's just being there as an artist or being presidents, hanging with presidents, going to I went to on a trip to Nice with Michael Jackson and saw him perform on the stage, and he had me standing on the in the dressing room off to the side as he would go back and forth, and I'm like, and why am I here? Why am I here when you said to me, Rhythm Nation, I want Rhythm Nation. How did that happen?
He liked that energy. Yeah.
So, yeah, he did. Ultimately, he said, you know, you and I, we have the same sense of humor because we're both from Indiana.
Hey, there's some truth. Though. I think there's some truth to that.
And all that dope. Well, I got to
say. So I didn't answer your questions.
No, of course you didn't. But Babyface, I really, 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 truly want to thank you for letting us.
Yes, man.
Pick your brain,
and I would say
in here, in your space.
One of my Titanic Babyface songs would be "Lady, Lady," like off vocally. Yeah, yeah. I love that song, man. That's like God.
You are such an R&B dude, man.
Yo, man, that's the record.
If you take that, I'm taking at the movies.
Which at one? The movies.
I never do the title right, but you know.
Shoot 'em up movies. There's been a cover of Shoot 'em Up Movies done by Moby Dick on No Limit Records.
Say what now?
What?
It is one of the worst covers you'll ever hear in your life. I don't know if Babyface is heard.
I don't know.
But
I haven't heard that.
No. It's Shoot 'Em Up Movies done by Moby Dick, who used to do all the hooks for No Limit.
Oh, that sounds like a bad idea.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's worse than the T.J. Swan and Whitney Houston.
Oh, my God. Yes.
T.J. and Whitney.
T.J. and Whitney. I still think he's my life.
This is it. Oh, yeah. No. This was 98. This is like.
I've never heard this. Have you ever heard it?
No. You got to do. Play. You got. This is such a meta moment.
You have to have heard
right
it because he had to best pay up.
No.
Nah, just no? For a cover. It's okay. Just, yeah, it's just. Here we go. Come on. I bought
a ticket. Okay. Got an aisle seat. Oh, it's just double?
Yeah, no. I was ready for that good old. How do you know this, Fonte?
Dude, like, yo, I was a No Limit head. Like, I just, that was in college. Like, I just consumed too much music as a kid, man.
Okay, that hurts a little bit.
wait till the hook. You ain't get just, you, the hook, because that's when it really just gets kind of painful.
It sounds like me in my bedroom recording myself sing along to the radio.
He trying right there. Oh, never mind. A video.
Oh, it was a video. Oh my God, it was.
At least they had the movie.
I want to have a meeting with Solange now.
All right. Hello, here we go. Come on, come with it, Moby.
Oh,
come
on.
Hold up, listen.
Here we go. Shoot 'em
up, movie. Hold up.
Wait, here it comes.
Oh!
He tried it.
Oh, Moby Dick.
All right. Beautiful.
Thank you, Babyface,
yes,
for that.
Thank you.
Thank you for that.
Wow. Again, we appreciate everything that you've done and your legacy and your status.
You are Black God.
Yeah. Oh, and let me just say,
there are like pieces of my life in the hallway.
If you get a chance to see a Babyface show today, like please do, because you surprised the shit out of me. The way you jump in the crowd and do the like goes to church, it was just amazing. So I just want to tell people that your show is amazing, bro.
And I just want to say, you're probably the last artist that everyone in my family was able to enjoy. My dad bought two copies of the Waiting to Exhale soundtrack. Kept one in the car, one in the bedroom.
Nice.
Whoa.
Yeah.
My mom.
I called my mom just before this to let her know that I was interviewing you, and she like almost probably hopped on a plane to come meet us here. My sister, she's one that you know brought Tender Lover into the house, and
wow.
Thank you. Like you are the one that brought my family together, I guess you could say. So,
is there someone that you haven't worked with yet? That
I haven't worked with you.
Ah, we in the studio.
Bang bang, gotcha.
See, I all right. Well,
we should do that someday.
Yes, we should definitely work with someday.
But in general, I think I mean, there's always artists that that come up that I'd be honored to work with, but you know, I've been so lucky to have worked with so many artists that if I don't, I'll be all right.
I see.
That's an awesome feeling.
That's got to be great.
Yeah, if you never make another record ever, like,
you're good.
Forever.
Sugar Steve. All right, so we do our reflections at the end. What have you learned this episode?
I'm still on one of the first things I heard, 40 nominations. That's incredible. I was going to say probably got a nomination even for the writer's block. When you had it.
Even my writer's block is sponsored by Neris.
What have I learned? Laya,
what did you learn?
I think I've learned that, like, all these songs, you're such a machine that in my mind, every song meant something deep and was based off of something, but you're such a machine that it doesn't always, and that's all right, because it does to me. That's what I learned.
Fonticolo, what did you learn?
Man, what I learned is just really just kind of reinforce something I've always believed, just with him saying that it's all about the song, you know what I mean? And just how it really is, it's easy to give stuff away just because if you feel that it can be better served for another person, it's easy to be unselfish in that way because you just see it has a higher purpose. And, you know, Bobby could take it further than I could, or Boys to Men, or whoever. That's just something that's really inspiring and very, very wise.
Boss Bill?
Jacoby.
the slang, Jacoby, yes. Breed.
Jacoby, like Breed.
Still working on Breed.
Should check out General Hospital. It's also really good.
Check out CBS.
I know General Hospital.
But
Luke,
I got to.
Luke and Laurie.
Yeah. Luke and Laurie.
I was going to say, when we stop this, what are we going to. When we leave like 5 minutes from now, what's the. What was it? We covered everything, right?
I feel like
all your face artists. We asked about Damian Dane.
We didn't ask about Damian Dane.
One thing we may have touched on a little bit, but just I guess we covered it. Yeah, never mind.
What was that?
I was going to ask you: do you prefer writing for women or men? Because you do such a great job writing for women. Like I don't think there's any other male songwriter that can write for a woman the way that you do. So like, do you have a preference?
I don't have a preference, but I know that I can, for women, it's a lot of times here in recent years, when I get someone comes in the studio, we have a conversation and we talk a lot and I get into, it's like a Dr. Phil moment by the time. So I go for tears in our first conversation.
Are you trying to Barbara Walters them?
Yes.
My baby face. That's incredible.
What kind of questions do you ask? Like, so
I go in for the relationships and everything so that we can get to a point to where we can, so I can know them and I can try to write from that perspective. Because it gives you something, you know, because at that particular point, you don't, sometimes you can guess about somebody and try to figure out who they are before you get to them. And it's like when Whitney first came and heard the song Miracle. She wasn't ready for it. But when she heard it, she cried. At least she had tears in her eyes. And so she said, that's not for me. And I thought to myself, to be honest, I thought to myself, it's not for you because it is for you. You know, and you don't, the truth is, I thought you don't want to sing things that you can relate to. So ultimately you go after songs that don't touch you.
Is that how you got her to turn or change her mind on it?
Well, later on, she decided to do the song, and I don't know what made her decide to do it.
Jedi mind trick.
Maybe so.
All right.
I have one more question.
Okay.
Sorry. This is a production question. When I listen to, like, Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis, I can usually tell who their B team was for a certain era. I don't think you've ever had a B team under you, or have you? Like just a team that does most of the grunt
work. Daryl was kind of a B team in terms of he might produce some of the vocals. Daryl's really good at producing some of the vocals, but in terms of tracks and things in the early days, we kind of like did it ourselves, and we would rarely. I don't even really remember putting our name on something that if we didn't do the tracks that we put our name on it like it was us. That wasn't. We usually just gave the credit to, like, if it was KO and Daryl, then they got the credit for producing it. You know.
All right. And
this is like a first.
You sure?
No, I know.
This is a first for Bill.
I'm good.
Nah, man, this baby face. Come on, man.
Right, I think it's the Indiana thing.
All right, here it is. I used to work at Def Jam a long time ago, and we went on this company retreat, and I can't remember the entire story, but L.A. was telling the story about you guys took I think it was a deal record to a club. You guys were like pumped up. You guys thought this was going to be like the biggest record in the world. You guys took it to a club to test it out, and it tanked.
Yeah.
Like, what do you do then? Like, how did you feel, like, knowing that your intuition wasn't right on that particular one?
Slow song. No,
what we learned is that wasn't our gig. When Teddy came out with I Want It, when we heard that I Want It, the first time I heard that, I said, oh my God, this is changing the game, and I don't know that we can compete with that. And then when Teddy delivered My Prerogative on the Don't Be Cruel album, I was like, So rather than trying to be that, we just kind of went the other way. And we weren't trying to be dance music people. You know, we didn't think we were going to necessarily make everybody dance per se. We were just going to entertain. And so it was really when we were going there, checking these songs in the clubs, that was early on. It's like in the deal days. We didn't have that. That wasn't our part of our thing. And so part of what happened is because of the ballad, because I fell in love and got broken hearts, that's ultimately what helped, you know, shape us as producers and writers, and that opened up the door for us, because even though Don't Be Cruel still was a love song, you know, what it was about. It wasn't Let Me Get Up In There, you know. So
who was Jackie? I'm sorry. Who was Jackie?
Jackie
and Don't Be Cruel. And Don't Be Cruel, yeah.
And Don't Be Cruel. Regardless of the fact that I want you, Jackie.
I want you more than you can see.
But you had to stop. Ill.
Okay.
Okay.
To be with me, Bobby B. And with a bad attitude, I can't compete.
That was
Bobby. Now you know the game. Now you know the game. You want to be with me, you got to be the same way that another girl would be. And if you want to be with me, don't be cruel.
Don't be.
And that's that. All My Children, the amazing coming. On behalf of Fine Tigolo, Bill, Boss Bill, and Unpaid Bill. And
that's like four bills and no Steve.
Sugar Steve. Babyface, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Questlove Supreme. Goodbye.
Questlove Supreme is a production of iHeartRadio. This classic episode was produced by the team at Pandora.
For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.